Up next in Flexible Elements, Per Jobourg talks with Wei-Min Shen about using life science approaches to robotic control. From IT Conversations. Hi, this is Phil Windley, the executive producer of IT Conversations. Today I'm excited to bring you another program from Flexible Elements with Per Jobourg.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media.
And now, here's our program from Flexible Elements.
So, welcome to the Flexibility Envelope podcast. I'm here with Professor Wei-Min Shen from Information Institute at the University of Southern California. We're going to speak about his work with Superbot and the Singo connector. Connectors are naturally a fundamental thing in modular robotics, so it's going to be interesting to hear that. Welcome, Professor Shen.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. You started to work with this for DARPA, I understand. Is that correct?
Yes. I was interested in robots a long time ago when I was doing my PhD. And that time I worked for Professor Herbert Simon. We were working on machine learning. I'm very curious how the algorithm we developed would work on real robots. And but time was limited. So before I graduated, I didn't get a chance. And then in 1995, we started using a big robots doing some early triple AI competition. The robots go to an office environment, schedule a meeting for three professors, and the robots need to find an empty conference room and then calculate the time and tell the professors where the meeting is, when it starts. By the time you get to the last one, you have to tell him the meeting starts in 1 minute. So everything needs to be calculated and adapt to the environment. And we did very well. We were in the second place. And it showed up in Alan Alda's Scientific American Frontier. And he was in there and picking up MM candies from our robots, saying, "Hey, so far, is this my favorite robot?" So then my dream continues in building soccer robots. So in 97, we were a world champion in Nagoya, Japan. We built 5 autonomous robots, play soccer in a field about 8 meters by 5 meters, 1 goalie, 2 attacker, and 2 defenders. So we did well. We scored 9 goals out of 12 goals of entire tournament. Unfortunately, 2 of them against our own goalie. It's kind of funny that student had a great time. We had a great time. And then we were always thinking, well, what is the future robots look like? And then there was a chance of a Defense Department is calling for innovative proposals. So me and my colleague, specifically Professor Peter Well, we worked together and wrote a proposal for the Conro robots. And during that writing of the proposal, it was like 3 a.m. in the morning, I come up with the idea of that hormone-inspired control. So that's how it all started. We're building small one. Then later on, this is the big one right away we're doing now. It's called Superbot. It started in 2005. So dream is to build 100 of those modules, fly over desert and drop it there, configure it into a rover, and goes to a sand dune, and then reconfigure again to climb the sand dune. And on top of that, become a little greenhouse, protect a group of seeds until they sprout in 2 weeks of time.
That's a very ambitious goal, huh?
Yes, and then there was involved 8 organizations. USC, myself was the PI, and USC leads 2 big companies like Lockheed Martin, some branches of that, and Raytheon, and 3 universities, including UPenn and University of Hawaii, and ourselves. I want to make sure I didn't missing anybody. and then NASA centers, AIM Center.
So is the, you actually discovered the idea 3 a.m. in the morning?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yes, and it was interesting, and we were thinking, wow, these complex robots, how are we supposed to control it? I was asking that question to myself for several days. Just happened to be I was reading biological papers before, thinking some other problems. I say, wow, let's use hormone. And I have no idea what does that mean in the beginning. But I vaguely know that a lot of biological systems are controlled, regulated by the hormone signals. So I started thinking and then learning and then building up. In the beginning, nobody believes me. It's kind of a ridiculous idea. But we were called for innovative ideas. And but turns out I'm very lucky. And as we dig in deeper, this approach offers a lot of advantages. Still going right now.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start to develop the SuperBot units? And
that's in 2005.
2005?
2005, yeah.
And what could you say is the main difference between the first few units you made and the current version? I guess connectors and electronics. What were the main challenges that like crept up on you that you didn't really know about in the beginning that surprised you?
Mm. The mechanical part, the unique feature of SuperBot is have 3 degrees freedom. I started to design the middle rolling thing first. And that part, and then the other part of the body, didn't change. Stay as
it's the same from the beginning.
Same from the beginning. What is improved is we have several generations of electronics, and the connector beginning is the manual connector, and then we have four generations of a connector design.
Yes, and what's the difference between those four? What's the like the new feature for each one?
Yes, and all these connectors need to be genderless.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to very thin and strong with good compliance when they dock, mm-hmm. support communications, others. So the latest one, the single robot connector, offers another unique feature is that if one side of the connector is damaged or not function, the other one can detach by itself.
Yeah, so if one of two modules work, the disconnect process can happen.
Yeah, otherwise...
Can it also connect to a broken module? Or
yes, it could.
To pick up a broken module, for
yes,
instance.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
And there's two more things we haven't done. One is to have it dust approve.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
a challenge one.
Yes, yes.
And no good solution yet.
No?
Eventually, we want all these to be waterproof.
Yeah.
So that's also
thinking. A very big challenge. Huh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But so far, this one is pretty good. It's mm-hmm. strong.
And the second thing you haven't done yet, but would like to do, except the dust proofing?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Dust proofing, what's the second thing I was thinking? We forgot. power sharing we have done now.
Mm-hmm. And also communication, I guess.
Communication, yes, mm-hmm. yes. So let's just say dust waterproof.
Yeah, yeah. Those make it foul safe so it mm-hmm. it's more reliable. Huh?
But
it's challenging, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Because there's so many things that could foul it. It can be maybe sand or something sticky like oil or many yeah. different things. And it makes it hard to make a connector that
right.
is safe against all of them.
Right.
And it also has to be safe in all possible states. It has to be safe when it's open.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be safe when it's closed, engaged. And there's so many variables. So.
And also, the connectors needs not consuming any power.
That's also very important.
And only use power when it's changing the state.
Yes,
connector. So that single state also, a single connector has that feature as well. Communication, mm-hmm. power sharing, and all those things.
Have you
and
seen?
It also has a this new connector has a lot of good room for compliance.
Yes, yeah.
It can comply in 3, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, yeah.
And the rotation.
Yeah, it would just close. When it closes, it will align the modules gradually.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen anybody that has launched a connector that could potentially handle this fouling or dust proofing thing? Do you see anybody that has any interesting early work there? Or
if you just shoot for that feature, it's not difficult. You could have a sealed compartment with the magnets.
Yeah.
So
but
then
magnets aren't very good.
Yeah. So the challenge is not that, okay, that is one feature I need. The challenge is to have them all.
Yes. As far as I know, the list we have today on the feature requirements of a connector is like 12 different requirements. Two things are critical here, and that's connectors and programming. I think the overall shape of the unit is probably more flexible. You can have your 3-degree of freedom units. There are also the 1-degree of freedom units. And then there are these strut-based extending units. Do you have any comments on those?
Yes. The reason that we go, the philosophy we use is our units can be independent. Even if you have only one unit, it can do the locomotive things you
and
like.
And then connect to a larger group or to another unit.
So if you reduce that, you sacrifice that. Say you have 2 degrees freedom, then you do well in one dimension.
But not.
But if on a turning,
you
don't have it.
And you will nearly guaranteed always need to turn to a line to another unit.
And also this trade-off. And
between complexity and...
Yes, you don't want it to have one unit too complex. There are, in the past, there are huge degree of freedom. It's too much. But most of them, the simple ones, if the price is a sensitive issue, most go for 1 degree. And 1 degree, yes, you could do things, but it's very limited. So that's why we go for the 3 degree that each unit... You can do things you like to do. So that's the main.
Could you tell me what you think about the units that extend and contract and might have some kind of gripper in both ends? Is that a good shape, you think, or
that's 1 degree?
Yeah, and then maybe some pitch yaw units in both ends.
That would be you added 2 more degrees.
Yes.
So as long as you have enough capability allow a single module
to move around in 3-dimension.
That's my goal.
Yeah, there was a new unit presented at the conference recently that actually could stand up by itself too, and I thought that was very interesting.
But Superbug can do that easily.
Yeah, with one unit.
Not only with one. Yes, with one unit you can stand up, but you can with up to 5. Imagine you have this 5. Lay on the ground. They stand up by itself.
Yes, I think I've seen a very beautiful video about that.
That is a very challenging task.
Yeah. Most of the systems we see today are either chain-based or chain with branches-based. When do you think we will start to see 3-dimensional solutions or 3-dimensional mesh solutions that exploit modular robotics?
What do you mean by 3-dimensional mesh?
Yeah, that's like a crystal structure rather than a chain or a chain with branches, basically legs of a spine. We've seen a lot of those, both your designs and the M-Tran and all of those. But we haven't seen the truly 3-dimensional solutions, for instance, where you have a mass like a cube or something, where the modules are interconnected in this cube. Do you think that's something we'll see in...
That's what I mentioned in the beginning of the conversation. I said the vision of Superbot.
Yes, yeah.
Is exactly that.
Yes.
And the current module can do that.
Yes, but...
So you pack these things in, when you fly over a desert, you want to pack them very tightly. So that could be a cube you mentioned.
Yeah. And then the whole modules are interconnected.
Yeah, they're all connected in the cube. Yeah. You could have connected in the cube in a certain way. And then once it landed, they could stretch out.
Yeah. And they, of course, reshape.
Yes.
This I know that this reconfiguration problem is very challenging. But I've also understood that there's been some recent progress that makes gives us hope that we will eventually do it with these where you take a group of units and treat them as some kind of a super unit, or that where you use instead of moving the units in the group, you move a whole. Could you tell us a bit what you think about the likeliness that we might not get a perfect solution to the reconfiguration problem, but a working solution for the number of units we can expect in the close future, maybe 1,000 or 2,000?
There are two class of reconfiguration.
Mm-hmm.
One is we call the lattice based.
Yes.
So the whole movement you mentioned, I think it's by that Goldstein, right,
mm-hmm.
from CMU.
Mm-hmm.
They envision a lot of cubes
mm-hmm.
that interconnect with each other,
mm-hmm.
and then you move the holes in
yes.
the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also MIT, Daniel's group is building lattice-based
pebbles.
Pebbles, yeah. Those are the single units that can connect with others.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, this is one class of reconfiguration. Mm-hmm. The other one is, you have a free arm, you wanted to connect your arm with your leg, this
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
These two are different.
Yes.
So, yes, I think both we have hope.
We have hope, and what we're talking then might not be 20, 30 years, but rather 5 or 10
years.
Yes,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you think that this problem is parallelizable? I mean, we're getting computers with maybe 12 CPUs, or I mean, we're even looking at reasonably short horizons where one chip might have 1,000 CPUs. Do you think that this development is something that will support and make this problem easier? Or is this problem like one line, so it has to be calculated immediately? Or can we use the parallelization option there?
Do you mean that each module got a supercomputer?
No, that we might have an external planner that assists with this planning for how to get one module from one place to another.
Yes. Most approaches do that right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So they gather information from the current configuration. They mm-hmm. run the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to go?
Mm-hmm.
And then tell everybody, and they started doing parallel execution.
Yeah. And then they, of course, have to take into account each other's steps so that, they're not in the way of each other when
yes.
they move. Yeah.
So one of our PhD students, Fei Li Ho, she's working on, after she proved that the MP completeness,
mm-hmm.
she's working on the parallel execution. Some algorithm can execute parallel without interfering each other.
Yeah, that's because mm-hmm. there is that's also an issue that there's so much that needs to go on in a module robot, and it also has to happen in parallel, and they may not disturb each other.
Yeah. So the key idea there, she had a called a morph line algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
It basically you can view the current configuration as a tree,
mm-hmm.
and then for each branch of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And all the branches can simultaneously start reconfiguring,
mm-hmm.
so in parallel.
That's beautiful. We should do something with that. We should do another show with her, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So remember we talked about that when we met at IROS 2008 about the killer application.
Mm.
What will be the application you think that makes this go from the research field to a more practical use in real life? Do you think that I think that it might be something a bit more simple, like that focuses on the self-reconfiguring and modular rather than robotics, because robotics is very hard with the artificial intelligence and the response to a very dynamic and unknown situation. Do you think that the killer application might be closer to a more controlled situation that relies more on the self-reconfiguring and modular rather than on the robotic part?
To be qualified as a killer application,
mm-hmm.
it has to be relevant to some real-world problem.
Yes, yes.
Right, of course. And so far, I think the closest we get is probably the vision I mentioned, mm-hmm. the Super Bowl vision.
Mm-hmm.
If that dream is realized, that mm-hmm. certainly put self-reconfigured robots on the map.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole world will open eyes and say, wow, this is something.
Mm-hmm.
So as I mentioned in the presentation, there's two things that's required.
Mm-hmm.
One is really hard to get from point A to point B. The other one is once you get a point B, and you really don't know beforehand what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's the situation where...
Yeah, yeah. Where and to do that autonomously is very hard, I guess.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what we are striking for.
Yeah. You should aim for the stars. Huh? Mm-hmm. So I think we'll thank you there.
Okay, you're welcome.
And hope to follow your research in the future.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You've been listening to a presentation from Flexible Elements with Per Jobork.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. The post-production audio engineer for this program was Rob Lepper. Our website editor was Cheryl Coe. The series producer is Joel Cherney.
This is Phil Wendley. I hope you'll join me next time for another great presentation from Flexible Elements with Per Jobork here on IT Conversations.